So as a reminder to our members and guests, the meeting is being recorded and this recording will be available to the public on the DOH website. So please speak loud and clear when you need to, speak one at a time, state your name before making or seconding a motion, and perhaps most importantly, go on mute if you are not talking. Dr. Hilbert.
I'd like the board members and staff to introduce themselves, stating their names and affiliations. Starting with Dr. Elder.
This is Rachel Elder. I'm from Syracuse. I am the director of the lab at Krause Hospital and affiliated with Lab Alliance.
Dr. Husky.
I'm David Husky, a registered nurse. I represent the people of the state of New York appointed by the governor's office.
Dr. Jacobson.
I'm Jessica Jacobson, and I am from New York City Health and Hospitals, Bellevue, and I also work at Bellevue.
Dr. McCarthy, is Dr. McCarthy present?
He is not present today, correct, Matt?
He was going to try and join in remotely, but appears not to have done so, at least yet.
Okay.
Beverly?
I'm Beverly Rausch. I'm the director of the Clinical Laboratory Evaluation Program and the commissioner's proxy for the Council on Human Blood and Transfusion Services.
And Dr. Schmidt?
Hi, I'm Dr. Amy Schmidt. I am a medical director with CSL Plasma. I cover different centers throughout the state.
I don't know if I introduced myself, but I'm Tim Hilbert. I'm chair of the council. I'm the medical director of the blood bank at NYU Langone Medical Center, and I'm also the director of the clinical lab for the Office of Mental Health in Rockland. Thank you, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Jacobson and Dr. Schmidt to their first meeting as council members. I note that Dr. McCarthy, as I said, not an accessible site and may not be able to attend at all, and thus his vote will not count toward the quorum for conducting council business. Now the DOH staff in attendance will introduce themselves.
Thanks, Dr. Hilbert. I'm Matthew Cohen. I'm the secretary to the council.
Hello, I'm Mary Beth Dooley. I work for the Blood Resources Program for the Department of Health.
Okay, and I will also add that we have two staff members from the Division of Legal Affairs, remotely, Alexa Nagy and Jason Rieger. I'd like to thank all council members for their time and commitment to attending these meetings and making them a priority. Your attendance is critical to the success of the council and the program. Now I will introduce the members of the public who are attending today's meeting. I will announce each registered participant. There's time reserved at the end of the meeting for public comment, but we have no members in attendance at the publicly accessible spaces, and so we do not expect any public comment. Today's participants include Keosha Barrett from CSL Plasma, Michelle Battle from Octapharma, Roger Brinser from Takeda, Nellie Cherney from KED Plasma, Amy Dalheim from Takeda, Ruth Espinoza from KED Plasma, Gina Horan from the American Red Cross, Betsy Jett from the New York Blood Center, Christina Joyce from Connect Life, Maria Loker from American Red Cross, Marcella McGalhays from Grifols, Alyssa McCaffrey from Takeda, Danielle Melendez from Farrell Fritz, Mark O'Rourke from Takeda, Heather Pratt from KED Plasma, Carrie Ann Richards from Global Plasma Regulatory Affairs, Catherine Rothwangel from Takeda, Adele Sayward from Takeda, Bill Spear from PPTA Global, Grace Marie Sullivan from Connect Life, Mark Houston from Takeda, and James Bridges from Connect Life. Today's agenda includes approval of the minutes of our June 1st, 2022 meeting, repeal of 10 NYCRR, New York Code of Rules and Regulations, subpart 58.2.14, and discussion of proposed bylaws for the council. Dr. Hilbert.
Sorry, we just have to close the door.
Our first order of business is the approval of the minutes of our June 2022 meeting. Is there any discussion of the minutes that people would like? No? Okay. I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented with edits discussed, but apparently no edits.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
That was Dr. Elder?
Elder.
And a second?
Dave Husky, I'll second.
Okay. Then I guess we need a roll call vote. So I think we have Dr. Elder, we have Dr. Husky. Jessica?
Yes.
Dr. McCarthy is not present. Beverly has approved. Dr. Schmidt?
I agree.
Okay. I agree as well. Tim? So the motion is approved. The next order of business is to approve the repeal of 10 NYCRR subpart 58.2.14. Ms. Roush will, Beverly will provide us with the repeal.
Thank you. A new law went into effect in June of 2022, recognizing social public sectors as a new legal entity under Article 5, Channel 5 of New York State Public Health Law. Such facilities are no longer defined as blood banks, requiring a permit under Section 574 of Public Health Law. In New York, the new law specifies that dispersed plasma donation centers shall comply with federal regulatory requirements for donor eligibility testing and source plasma collection. Prior to June 19th of 2022, source plasma donation centers operating in New York held blood bank permits and were subject to the provisions of Section 58-2.14 of Title 10 of the New York State Codes and Rules and Regulations, titled Collection of Source Plasma. These regulations were more stringent than other regulations. After June 19, 2022, source plasma donation centers were no longer included in the definition of a blood bank, and Section 58-2.14 has therefore become obsolete. The proposal to repeal Section 58-2.14, which the Council approved in June, was published for public comment in September of 2022. No comments were received. Final approval of the regulatory amendment to repeal this section is required.
Thank you, Bev. Before we vote on approval of this regulatory amendment, are there any questions?
So do they no longer have to be licensed in New York State?
There are new regulations that were proposed for religious centers where they would have to register as a site. Those proposed regs were also submitted for public comment in 2022. There are comments for those as well. We are anticipating final adoption of those regulations in first quarter of this year.
Any other questions? May I have a motion to approve the regulatory amendment to repeal 10 NYCRR subpart 58.2.14?
Sure. Jessica Jacobson.
Jessica made a motion to approve. Seconded.
This is Dr. Elder. I'll second.
And a roll call on the motion. Dr. Husky?
Aye.
I'm sorry, was that an affirmative?
Affirmative.
Yeah. Beverly?
Aye.
Dr. Schmidt?
I would agree.
And I'll also vote to approve. So the motion is approved. Thank you. Next, Beverly is going to take us through the proposed bylaws for the organization.
Thank you again. We are proposing long overdue bylaws for this council. The members have received a copy of the draft bylaws in advance of this meeting. In brief, the bylaws describe the purpose and composition of the council. They establish the officers of the council and their duties. They describe the conduct of council meetings, including the allowance for video conference attendance and extraordinary circumstances that we voted on at our last meeting, as well as the voting procedures. The bylaws authorize the formation of ad hoc committees. And finally, the bylaws define the code of ethics and requirements for notifications of conflicts of interest.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Are there any questions or discussion from the council?
This is nice to see the bylaws. I don't think I had reviewed them before. This is Rachel. I'm wondering if our purpose is clearly stated in the bylaws, as far as it seems like we do more than what is in there, as far as counseling about appropriate transfusions in the past. I noticed we also used to talk about like artificial tears, other products that weren't actually blood. And I think this came up that we don't really do anything with tissue. Is this something for discussion, or would we need to add anything, or is it general enough that putting out some guidelines are within the standard of safety?
Given that tears now, artificial tears are made are plasma products, they're no longer going to fall under the auspices of the blood regulations. They're going to fall under just FDA pending new New York State registration.
I'm just asking because a lot of like plasma rich plasma, stuff like that, what we had talked about before at the committee, maybe wasn't even in our, I'm not sure that it was mentioned that we're only going to look at things that are given IV. Is that part of it? Rather than.
There was a decision made by the department several years ago that platelet-rich plasma only when given intravenously would be regulated by the department. So things like the vampire facials and procedures like that, we would not be overseeing.
This is Matt. I will add that although the bylaws do describe the purpose of the council, I think we could discuss other relevant topics. We just might not be able to pass guidelines related to them.
And one of the intentions is to look at and revise the guidelines that are already posted and then potentially provide other guidelines relevant to human blood and blood products that are used for the purpose of transfusion. I think that's where the our authority is kind of limited, is that it would be for the purpose of transfusion.
You're making, this is Amy, Dr. Schmidt. So you're making a differential between transfusion and infusion.
So the authority and public health law for the council says that it's for providing guidance on blood and blood products for the purpose of transfusion. And that's in Article 31, I believe.
Answer your question?
Not exactly, but it sounds like there's a differentiation between transfusion and infusion.
Well, what I am also trying to say, it says establishing minimum standards for the proper collection, processing, fractionation, storage, distribution, supply for the purpose of transfusion, but there's nothing about the administration, appropriate transfusion, it all deals with the safety of the product, not the administration of the product. We did nursing administration guidelines. I just wonder if this is broad enough to cover what the when we do talk about the safety, not just the safety of the product, but the safety of the patient getting the blood. We did transfusion reactions. I'm not sure this covers that one.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. I believe that we would be, as the department and also our authority to regulate blood banks, the blood bank is defined as any entity that distributes, processes, stores, collects blood and blood components in New York. So as far as the blood bank issuing the blood to for the purpose of transfusion, we also would have authority over that as well. So that we would be able to provide guidance on the safety of the patient as well as the product.
All right, I'm just making sure that that covers that.
So you mentioned transfusion, the reactions, but there's also things in the ranks of data. Sample collection for any hematology testing at that point.
Matt, can you repeat what you said at the last part of it? We couldn't understand. It kind of went away.
Sorry, I said that you mentioned in the question that about transfusion reactions, but there's also things in the regs about collection of patient samples for any hematology testing. Like that. So I guess those are other things that might be covered, but I don't know whether we have to.
We have to list everything.
I think there's some of the authority that can be left to interpretation. I don't think we have to be that explicit in the bylaws.
I mean, you can add.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And all applicable.
We can certainly add language to the proposal today if there's suggested language that you'd like to see included.
So Dr. Dirksen, you had some suggestion?
I think this might be.
Something about Dr. Jacobson, if you have any suggested language. Do you have suggestions?
Or it says, and the supply of human blood or blood remnant for the purposes of transfusions. You could add another sentence saying, addressing the sample collection and distribution for administration of blood products.
Yeah.
I just think we should have something about the safe administration and indications, something along the lines of that safe and appropriate administration.
Understood.
That was Dr. Elder.
Okay. So that would be potentially under purpose of part two, the purpose of our organization, shall be your seventh policies.
No, I think it actually goes under
part three.
Okay. Between where it says transfusions, comma, subject,
yep.
I think you would just add something after transfusions that covers the safe administration of blood products. Processes related to administration of blood.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to rephrase or restate what I think Dr. Elder suggested, proposed. So where it says, for the purpose of transfusions and the processes of safe administration of blood and blood products. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Safe and appropriate? I mean, do we need to just say safe would be appropriate? I don't know.
I think you need the and appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll restate once more. And the processes for safe and appropriate administration of blood and blood products.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion?
Sorry to be such a pest, but there is a word I had to look up, and I just wonder if we could change it, unless it has to be, but two places there is as soon as is practicable, like a number 7 for, I think it's the minute, and that word comes up again in number 4.1, schedule in advance to the extent reasonably practicable. And I wonder if feasible, or do you want to keep that wording? I'm not sure, is that a legalese kind of word?
In that regard, I will have to defer to our colleagues in DLA. Alexa or Jason, if you're paying attention, could you weigh in, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think it works, but if we want to go with more simplistic language, I think that would be fine. We can do that.
And the other thing is, maybe just get, can you, it says as soon as is, you know, after the meeting, practicable. Do you just want to give it time, like within 2 weeks or something, rather than, or do you want to leave it nebulous?
So there's actually, I think it's open meetings law that requires us to post our meetings within a certain number of business days.
So maybe it should be that.
So it may be somewhat redundant in the bylaws as they are. But I wouldn't want to put anything into the bylaws right now that is different from what we are already required to do. I think
that maybe as required.
Jason, again, could you weigh in?
Give me 1 second. I'll see if I can get what the requirement is.
Requirement is. Thank you.
Put that in there. Yeah.
And Dr. Elder, where else was practicable? I'm sorry, I missed the second.
It's under meetings of the council for number 1. Shall meet as frequently as its business may require. Shall be scheduled in advance to the extent, and maybe this is also something that is stated somewhere else.
No, this is not, and so we could certainly replace practicable with feasible here.
Mm-hmm.
If that works for everybody.
Oh, and there was another one. Number 3 also had that word at the very end.
You want to replace that with feasible?
Seems like a more normal word.
True.
I think this is Jason again, for the meeting minutes, I think 2 weeks would make sense, and that is in line with what the open meetings law requires.
Okay.
That it be posted within 2 weeks, so I would be okay with that.
Oh.
Okay, thanks, Jason.
Any other discussion or suggestions?
One of the questions that has come up is regarding reporting of interests prior to the first annual meeting and exactly the method for reporting those interests. And we discussed this with our colleagues in DLA, and they said it's up to the council, but suggested by email to the secretary, which shall be recorded and distributed, would be adequate. And I don't think we need to specifically state that in the bylaws.
You don't need to specifically state the manner. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Correct.
Or the method. And will that be tracked?
Could you?
Anyway,
could where, you?
Do we have to mention at the beginning of the first meeting or anything that it's been done, or is it just assumed that it was?
It will be shared within the council.
Okay.
And I think if we discuss that at the beginning of the meetings and note that, note any conflicts, should there be any.
Okay.
Could you clarify that one more time? So at the each meeting, people were supposed to declare any conflict of interest? Is that what you're talking about?
So at each, prior to the first meeting in any year, members will disclose any interest they have so that we can determine if there are conflicts before meetings. And if there are conflicts, we will so state them at the beginning of the respective meetings. But so a month before the first meeting in any given year, we will ask you for your interests to determine if there will be conflicts, to determine if there are conflicts at subsequent meetings that year.
When you say interest, is this different from what we declare on the paperwork to the state for the positions that we have, like where we, you know, declare like whatever stocks you own and things like that, or?
This is different. This is there will be less to declare. The interest that you're declaring in for the purposes of council business are restricted to interests in clinical laboratories, blood banks, or source plasma donation centers governed by Article 5 of the Public Health Law. And Dr. Schmidt, you can find this in Section 7, Conflicts of Interest, Disclosure of Interests, Item B, that lists the interest that you have to disclose. My understanding is that the interest you declare to the state to be appointed to the board are much greater. There are many more interests. You have to declare pretty much everything to the state. For our purposes, you only need to declare a few specific interests that might present conflicts.
You know, usually when you're doing these disclosures, it's maybe the beginning of the year, and then if there's
change,
a significant change that might affect something, is that something that I mean, I know everyone assumes that that's the case now, but does that have to be stated specifically?
I'm not sure it has to be, but we could certainly indicate it. We could include it in the bylaws.
I mean, certainly anytime there's a vote that could potentially have a conflict of interest, someone would need to disclose that they have a conflict relating to a particular item that is being voted upon.
Yes, correct.
So whether you collect that basic information once a year or multiple times a year, each time there's going to be a vote on a new regulation or a new requirement, someone should also
yep.
be acknowledging publicly if they have a conflict.
Yeah, and I think that's under number 2 in the conflicts of interest section, disclosure at council meetings.
Then it doesn't really matter how many times a year you collect it, because it's
true.
You know,
it's publicly disclosed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Currently, in some requirements for the membership of this council, you know, we require that the individuals of the council be involved in blood banks. That knowledge.
Potential.
Potential. Yeah.
Okay, so this is Dr. Schmidt again. So here's my question, because I'm guessing that it may be more of me, because I work with CSL Plasma. Is that my conflict of interest? I don't own any stocks or bonds or anything related to them. Is that the interest you want disclosed every meeting?
So we would need that disclosed annually before the first meeting in any given year. And if there were any, if there was business before the council that directly impacted or directly affected CSL Plasma, yes, you would have to disclose this, that, and you might have to recuse yourself from discussion or votes of business matters that directly affected CSL Plasma.
So if we made a proposal that would help you get more plasma that you would have an interest in, is that what you're talking about, that you'd have to disclose? The decision would benefit particularly that business? Is that what we're talking about?
It's more likely to be an issue if it hurts a business or hurts rather than benefits.
I mean, it doesn't say that you couldn't vote. It just says that you would have to disclose. The way I read it.
The language says that the individual may, but shall not be required to abstain from the participation in the session of the vote.
Well, for example, we just voted on the certificate of qualification, need and the adherence to, some guidelines regarding physicians at Source Plasma Centers and repealing that. That actually affects all of the Source Plasma Centers in the state, including, CSL Plasma and myself. I voted on it.
Yep. As Beth pointed out, there is a may, you're not required to recuse yourself. And since repeal of those, as Beth stated earlier, in discussion of the repeal is essentially, it's required, but they're no longer regulated as blood banks. And so although you have an interest, it's not a conflict of interest per se.
Right.
And so I don't think you would be required to be recused, Dr. Schmidt, under the bylaws that we have not yet approved.
Yeah, essentially, as soon as the law went into effect in June of 2022, those entities were then held to the federal requirements, and they were the laws and regulations that we have in New York pertaining to blood banks no longer applied to Source Plasma Donation Centers.
No conflict, because it didn't apply.
This is Jason Rieger from DOH Legal. I would just add, to the extent that it applies to all facilities equally, typically that would not be a conflict that would prevent you from being able to vote.
Okay, so that helps a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
And
no problem.
The bylaws haven't been adopted yet, so it doesn't apply to a previous vote.
Very true.
So, I'm sure it provides some reassurance to Dr. Schmidt going forward.
I was feeling kind of guilty and bad. I didn't know.
No, you're all good.
So we're comfortable that if there's a significant change to your conflicts or potential interests, that you would disclose that, or just the requirement is still fixed that annually? Is that what we're saying?
I believe the language is that it would be reported to the secretary annually, and then that would be shared amongst the membership.
Okay with that. Because if you have to acknowledge if you have a conflict with any particular agenda item, then it's publicly available information.
Okay, so at this point, have I covered my conflict of interest in great detail that I'm covered for the year?
No.
Unless they change, or unless something comes before the council that directly affects CSL Plasma, and as Jason said, no other no other entities, then yes, you're covered, Dr. Schmidt.
So I guess the question was, you know, since this was the first meeting of the year, if this requirement will go into effect prior to the next meeting, or it would go into effect next year prior to the first meeting? Or is that a crazy question?
It would go into effect prior to the next meeting this year.
Okay.
Assuming we have another meeting this year.
And everyone will be required to send Bev something about their...
I will be in touch with you about conflicts of interest prior to any subsequent meetings this year.
Okay, great. That's fine. It makes sense to me.
And while we're on the topic of discussing meetings, until 2020, 2021, the council hadn't met for a few years. I'd like to start setting a standing meeting date. I don't know if the spring or the fall is more available for membership, if we can take a poll on that.
My guess is we can find a time either in the spring or the fall.
Okay. I just want to start putting some
couple of dates.
Yeah, like every September-ish.
And Mr. Husky has a question here.
Listening to the conversation, I guess that I would be a little concerned about the appearance, be wary of the appearance of a conflict of interest with individuals working for pharmaceuticals that actually deal in plasma products or blood products. And it's best just to be, like you said at the beginning of the meeting, as clear as possible, as transparent as possible. So the bulging of this kind of information early in the year and having it on record for anyone that is, you know, has a similar conflict would be the best way to hedge that off, speaking for the public.
Would you like to see anything specific in the bylaws, or do you think they're adequate as is?
I believe they are adequate as is. As long as the divulgence is early enough in the year, and as long as we have on record, if any, as you said earlier, any vote has to do with a specific increase of a profit margin for any of these companies, it'd be nice to know if someone had an investment in the company or was getting an income from the company ahead of time.
Public disclosure being the key.
Absolutely.
Okay, are we good on this?
Any further discussion or comments?
Okay, I think, may I have a motion to approve the bylaws as presented with the changes that were discussed?
This is Rachel, I'll move to accept the bylaws as changed.
I'll second, Jessica.
Jessica will second. Dr. Husky?
Accept bylaws.
McCarthy, is Dr. McCarthy still not present? Beverly?
I approve.
Dr. Schmidt?
I agree, I approve.
I agree as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Hilbert. Next is the public comment portion of the public hearing. We have no outside members of the public present at the publicly accessible spaces today, and nobody indicated a desire to make any public comments. So unless there's anybody who would like to speak up right now, we can move on.
Okay. Thank you all. That concludes today's agenda items. May I have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Sure.
Yes. Anyone second that motion?
I'll second. It's Rachel.
Any discussion? No, doesn't seem like. So we'll have a roll call vote. Mr. Husky?
Aye.
Beverly?
Aye.
Dr. Schmidt?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. I do as well. So thank you, and okay. We'll adjourn.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't